Hey everyone, I'm Andy Trattner.
And I'm James Mollinger.
This is Yup and Coming, an open-ended conversation with interesting young professionals about their lives and careers.
We're so excited to have you along for the ride with us as we learn from our guests about the chances they've taken, the tough decisions they've made, and the great careers they're building.
This week, we bring to you Lee Marie Broswell. Lee Marie and I met before coming to college, actually, and we flew together on the same airplane to MIT. We also worked together at Scale AI, where Lee Marie had joined much earlier than me and actually helped me to get a job. I'm very inspired by Lee Marie in a lot of different ways. She's an incredibly gifted technical mind and also an excellent communicator. Very powerful combination. In this chat, we cover a lot of things. For example, Lee Marie's recent transition into venture capital, as well as how to build a great company, especially how to get through those early days when everyone's hustling and things are pretty shaky and new and requires a lot of grinding. We talk about being a woman in STEM, pros and cons of East Coast versus West Coast college institutional mentality, how the pandemic has shifted her thinking, and recently becoming engaged. Shout out to Dan. If you like the show, please subscribe on your favorite platform and let us know who or what you want to see covered next at yupandcoming.com.
The first question I'll ask you is, can you please take us through the journey of your professional identities as kind of a kid, maybe more aspirational? What did you want to be when you grew up? And how did that evolve over time to kind of where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we go back to the very beginning, I'm originally from Alabama, extremely small town in Alabama. I think I was pretty clueless what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a Broadway dancer at one point, a vet, you know, everything was kind of all over the place. And there's this Catholic, private elementary school that I went to until fifth or sixth grade. And then I went to Coleman Middle School, which had a math team. And then my parents, they said, oh, you should probably join that since that seems like the more advanced math class. So then I joined that. And that's when I'd say my kind of professional identity really started at that point. And I got on the math team, and I think at that point, I just realized how awesome it was to challenge myself and solve hard problems. And I got really obsessed with that. And so that's what led me to first go to a local, an hour away, this math circle, where there were kids who, who had been training their whole lives to do math competitively. And then eventually that sort of led me to go to camps outside the state, as well as eventually boarding school. So I guess that's starting to be a long-winded answer, but I'd say at that point, I realized I think in high school when I was getting very into it, this is the kind of stuff I wanted to be doing, challenging myself, solving hard problems. And I thought that was going to look like math research in college. And that's what I went into college with the mindset of. But yeah, then I went to MIT, and even all of those forces, there were so many industry rabbit holes that I found myself going into. First, it was, Jane Street trading. A lot of my friends who, I'd met through math and things like that highly recommended that I at least try out, quantitative trading in Jane Street. And that was really fun. And then at that point, I was like, okay, maybe I don't know what I want to do because this was so much fun. So then I tried out, engineering, doing it at big companies, at Google, doing it at startups. And then I think that's what ultimately led me to kind of pick my first job out of college. The place where I felt the most excited was building something zero to one. And that's being, a founder, an engineer, an early startup. And so I joined Alex, who I'd actually met playing poker in college, to start Scale.
And now you are a VC.
Yeah. So I guess the kind of glue between all of that is I started Scale as a very early engineer. I learned so much, how do you build a business? like I was on the in the kind of front row of like all the developments going on in machine learning, whether it was like, you know, self-driving or robotics or all these companies that are trying to build a better search engine or trying to, you know, like give you more personalized content. Yeah, just learning both about the macro and then just internally a scale went from, you know, being 5 people to now it's like past 300 people. You just learn how to build an organization. And so, you know, like I was at scale for about 4 years. And I mean, it was awesome. I learned so much. But then at the same time, like I started angel investing on the side because all my friends were starting these cool companies and I definitely wanted to be a part of them. And then also, you know, just like seeing, developing but more opinions on sort of like trends in the industry, wanted to invest in those things. And then that's what kind of got me thinking, okay, well, it kind of combines my love of problem solving. Like with VC, you're basically given this open problem space and you want to figure out like, okay, what are the best opportunities, best ROI for investing capital into, you know, early stage companies. And it kind of combined that with like my love of like building, getting to be a partner to companies. So that's kind of what led me to be interested in VC in the first place. And it is day 8 for me and I'm loving it.
Yeah. Congrats on all the big moves. I love how you draw this thread of math and like systematic kind of problem solving and hard things.
Almost like I had to prepare for VC interviews recently.
That's a good point. But yeah, so what do you think, like at a young age maybe, and in your formative years, what made you a particularly good fit to kind of fall into veering quantitative early? And you mentioned you like really loved and you just wanted to get more into the math world.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's like, I think my journey, like compared to a lot of my friends or people I've met, is kind of unique in that like I was the one who really pushed to do it versus like their parents getting them into it. Right. I mean, if I, you know, if I have kids, I'll be pushing my kids. So I'm not saying that it's bad if your parents push you into it. But yeah, I mean, I think one, you know, I'm just naturally a very competitive person. And so like being able to do something like math where it was very clear, like, you know, you compared to the rest of the group, like who, like it's, you're competing. Who is the smartest or solving these problems the fastest or whatever. I think that was really intrinsically motivating. And I don't think like I never did sports or anything. So I think that was like maybe an outlet for me. And then also just feeling like I was, you know, growing up, I always felt like I was a little weird. So like having a thing that I could, you know, point to and like say, okay, maybe this is why I'm so weird. And like there's a positive externality of that. I think that was another kind of motivator.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess that kind of puts you in the math camp, but even within the math camp, then I guess you are a pretty high performer, in my opinion, like someone I look up to in my algorithms class, asking for answers and, you know, top 5 papers, RSI, whatever. Do you think there are specific things even within that quantitative crowd that kind of propelled you to perform quite well? And I don't know if you want to go into like women in STEM topic, but I'm also kind of curious about that. If there are any challenges that you like had.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, definitely like, I don't know. It depends on what group of people you put me in, right? As to like the kind of like absolute ranking. Like when I went to boarding school, I always described myself as the worst of the best. Like I would be on the team that went to the competition, but you know, I would definitely be at the bottom of the heap because I mean, Exeter is where like the, you know, some of the world's brightest competitive math people go, and it pushed me a lot. So that was definitely what I wanted. The women in STEM thing, I mean, yeah, that's always been something that's been challenging, especially when you're, you know, in middle school and like people haven't matured yet. Like definitely going to math camps and programs. There was a lot of like, you know, people made fun of me, like I wasn't treated very seriously. But I mean, I think that was good in some sense because then it makes, when people get more mature, at least it makes it a little bit easier. You develop a pretty tough skin. And you also develop like, and this is both good and bad, but if you're around men all day, it's just more normal. Like you know, you're not expecting to be around a lot of, people of different genders, which is both it's sad that that's the way the world is. And I think the only way to really change it is to provide some, excellent, providing great examples for the next generation, and then two, get into a position of power where you can have influence over changing things. I think that's kind of what keeps me motivated to keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah. It's really interesting, I guess, how Exeter is kind of a microcosm of MIT. So at MIT, right, there's the IMO kids, but Exeter, it's the same thing. So having that early kind of acceleration in high school still puts you kind of above the average MIT student in my mind.
Yeah, it was definitely very unique in that I think Exeter, it was so challenging that going to MIT, I think maybe that's almost why I got into so many different things too, trying out different things, because Exeter gives you kind of if you do really well at Exeter, you can just kind of almost coast through MIT. And then you can figure out what other sort of extracurricular or industrial pursuits you want to do. So that was kind of nice.
I know you had a little bit of an accelerated college departure / leave of absence mixed in there. Can you go into more detail of how that whole transition was?
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is advice I would give anybody, but if it's possible for you too. But basically, during college, I tried a bunch of different things, both throughout the school year and with the internships. So my freshman year, what's great about MIT, as you know, is in January, you can take it off and you can go do something else. So I did trading that January period and the summer. When I was a sophomore, I did machine learning engineering at Google. And then I decided that I just didn't have a great idea of what I wanted to do because I liked so many different things. So I decided in the footsteps of other people or at least a few people that I knew had done this, I decided to take a year off. So I just, or actually at the time it was going to be a semester maybe. But basically MIT lets you take these leaves of absences. And so I said, okay, well, I do actually want to try, working at different startups. I want to try working in different roles at different startups just to see what I like the most. So yeah, I took a whole year, worked at Blend as an engineer, actually worked at Scale a little for a month, did Google APM internship. And then I thought I was going to drop out of school and join Scale full time. So I actually joined Scale full time. But then after a few months, my parents convinced me you should go back and you should finish up the year of MIT. Then I went back, finished up the semester, worked part time, continued working part time from Scale. And then joined Scale right after I finished school. But I guess I think the takeaway is if you can, just try a bunch of different things. Don't leave any stone unturned. I saw some of my friends, they like something and then they just continue doing that same sort of thing, which is great if you feel very sure. But I think as a college student, especially, someone with a high potential, you need to just figure out just the surface area, maximize surface area versus going deep on any one particular thing. And I think it's cool having all of those different experiences, coming into Scale. I just had so much context of different industries as well as just connections. So if I ever needed advice, it was your network's a lot wider. And being a VC, having a wide network is great. So I'm glad that I kind of had all that diversity of experience.
When you were selecting job opportunities to maximize that surface area, did you just kind of take what you could get? I know you had a strong resume already by that point, so you could kind of get a bunch of different options. But how did you pick among those?
Oh, no, I mean, I definitely and this goes back to the question of how hard should you push yourself in coursework in college. But I definitely spent a ton of time just researching internship opportunities and things like that. I've spent time writing cover letters for anything. I've gone through and pestered every single person in my network. What startup do you think is cool? And, can you introduce me to somebody there? The way that I got my Google placement was spamming a bunch of mailing lists. I really want to do ML at Google. Can you figure out a person who's doing ML at Google so that I can work with them as an intern? Like, you have to be super proactive. Even if your resume, if your resume is strong, like, there's just so many people that want these sorts of like positions, that like, yeah, I think it's just really like being shameless and taking advantage of your network and then just devoting a lot of time to figuring out like, okay, what are all the possible things I want to do? Like, who are all the people that I might want to work with? Now preparing for these interviews that are probably going to be really hard, learning all about this different industry, like having a coherent story for like what you've done so far. I would say it's like something that maybe at the start, like, I didn't realize how much work it was going to be, but thankfully, like, some of the clubs I had joined at MIT, there were people who had gotten these opportunities before, and they said, hey, you actually do have to like invest a ton of time if you want to get picked for these.
Yeah. And then once you're in an organization and some of these lists, like, how do you have particular ways that you cultivate those relationships?
Staying connected on social media. That's definitely a big thing. Even though I know you're not a huge social media proponent. But yeah, I mean, just like remaining friends on Facebook, connecting shamelessly with people on LinkedIn. Only recently have I started using Twitter to a great extent. But yeah, no, I think that's a big part of it. And then just like, I mean, I've just had to teach myself over the years, like, because I did start very introverted, but like just learning, like, if you're not like super aggressive, like, probably fine to just ping people and ask them something, whether it's like, oh, do you want to come join Scale as an engineer? Or, you know, do you have any ideas of startups I should be looking at? Just like, you know, taking advantage of the existing network that you have and not being scared to reach out to people.
That's great. As an introvert, what have you done to overcome that natural tendency to want to curl up in a corner and read a book? Because you strike me as someone who can definitely be the life of the party and very go-getter, commanding the product meetings.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate that. It's definitely been a process, because, you know, I started Scale as an engineer, actually, so it was you know, I've been a product manager. I was a product manager for probably 3 years, and then now a VC, who I would say it's very hard to be an extremely antisocial VC. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you can do. Like, there's ways to like stretch yourself in more of like a controlled setting. Like, I took a bunch of acting classes in college, for instance, and that's like, you know, you do really crazy stuff maybe in front of 20 people. And then you at least have that skill that you can flex if you ever need it. I got super into it too. It was like not even just the first one. I even took like more than the required amount because, like, yeah, I mean, I do think it kind of pushes you in a different direction. Just like if you're like literally, you know, doing crazy dances and screaming at the top of your lungs, like in front of, you know, an audience of 30 to 50 people, like, you know, you won't feel as scared to like stand up in front of a room of people, you know, at a product meeting or whatever. So that definitely something I would recommend. Yeah. Doing like creative improv acting stuff in college, I think was a great experience.
That's awesome. I have not heard that one before. And it's so obvious once you hear it. It's like, yeah, go try.
Yeah, it's great. Plus it gives you just like a lot more appreciation for improv in general. Like, I loved, well, pre-COVID, like, I love, you know, stand-up comedy and improv shows and things like that.
Has COVID been difficult for you?
I mean, definitely compared to just the tragedy that it's wrought upon, you know, the majority of the world, I would say definitely I've been very lucky. You know, like, I have had friends who have lost, you know, their parents or relatives. So, I mean, that, like, you know, I'm just kind of on a different, like, luckiness plane, because I think, yeah, I haven't had anyone that has been severely affected. You know, all of my job, my family's jobs, like, they haven't been affected by COVID very much. But yeah, I mean, in general with COVID, like, I think it's maybe, and this is a macro thing too, it's just accelerated a lot of things, right? It's accelerated a lot of things going online, e-commerce, like, social events. It's accelerated, like, just a lot of, you know, automation trends, because Obviously, we want to keep people safe. So if a robot could do it, you know, we should probably get a robot to do it versus risking somebody's life. And then it's just accelerated a lot of things for me personally. Like, you know, I got engaged. I think you, in this sort of environment, you just really, you know, it's very clear whether or not you want to spend your time with the people that you're spending your time with. And then also, I think it led me to, you know, to my career change, just like being at home, having more time on my hands for angel investing, for thinking about what do I want to be doing in a decade. That's definitely, you know, contributed to the recent career move.
Yeah. Huge congrats on the engagement.
Thank you.
You're someone who stands out in my mind as an example of why I'm less against dating apps now, because I was like, wow, if Lee Marie is doing it, then it's got to be reasonable.
It's a funnel. It's a funnel, you know? You gotta. I don't know. I think people, people always make fun of the study where it's like, okay, you need to date X people, and then after that person, then you use these criteria to pick.
The secretary problem.
Yeah, that's it. Wow, such a bad math person not knowing the name. But then, yeah, I think it's kind of true. And I think dating apps really help you be like systematic about like, okay, well, here's what I want in a partner. And, you know, then helping you to find that person. So I don't know. I don't know what I think the only stigma I'll give dating apps is like, you know, you gotta be careful. Don't meet somebody that's going to kill you. Right.
Sure. You mentioned being at home during COVID and thinking about your career moves and what you want to be doing. How do you go through that process? And in particular, have there been any experiences or inflection points?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more just about me realizing like that even though like I do enjoy being an operator and working at a startup, I am just naturally drawn to a world where I can, like, I just love learning about lots of different things. And being at a startup, you become an expert in one particular thing, and that's all you do all day. And maybe it became a little bit more clear that that's what I was doing, because all the distractions of like going to work, talking to people, like, you know, going to the gym, like all that was taken away. And it's just your job. You're just on your computer doing that job. And even though like it was an exciting job, you know, like I worked at scale for 4 years and it was an excellent experience. I just kind of realized, like with the angel investing on the side, like this is what I want to be doing. Like I just want to be diving deep into all of these different industries and like, you know, just thinking about a lot of things at the same time. And, you know, would it be awesome if that was like my full-time job? I think it was just basically like it just became very clear during COVID, like, you know, this is your thing, that your side hustle, your angel investing you're doing on the side. And the side hustle was just so interesting that and then also just having the extra time to like, yeah, think about like, okay, well, let's learn about VC then. Like, let's talk to your friends in VC. Let's, you know, see if this is actually like a real something that you could really like get into, and that would be a good fit.
You mentioned you were early on like math academia track. And now that you've done like a variety of things in industry, what would you have told your younger self to try to explore and understand like some key things that academia maybe doesn't have?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, when I went to college, I had like just no idea of the different things that you can do. Cause I just been so heads down with the math team and competitive math. Let's see. Okay. So the things that I guess I've learned that have surprised me the most, this might be redoing the question a little bit, but if I could tell my younger self that was starting college anything, well, I guess I'd be a little biased because I know now what I like. So I would say to my younger self, maybe you should consider going to Stanford and learning about all these different startups. Like it's just incredible, like being in the Valley and like seeing the leg up that Stanford and UC Berkeley and all of those schools, those kids have just from like, by virtue of being so close to all of the startups. I don't know. I think just, I wish I knew that academia is not as great if you want to just like, if you're very, let's say, impatient, like you just want to kind of bring upon impact to the world very quickly. And you want your job to like change and evolve a lot, and you like working with people, then yeah, I would recommend like maybe go the company building route. But yeah, I just kind of really didn't I just didn't understand much about tech companies at all going into college. So I wish I had definitely like understood that, you know, building startups is really fun. And like, you should, if you ever feel entrepreneurial, you should just go for it. That's kind of my, I wouldn't say biggest regret, because I eventually figured it out. But like, it just took me a while to figure it out.
Yeah, that's fascinating that you would choose to go to a different college, maybe. Although now I guess you're maybe differentiated as like an East Coaster.
Like, kind of, but it's still, it's so funny. Like, when I did Jane Street, it was all East Coast people except like one guy. And he and I are now like still very close friends to this day. And he's like, he helped me get the internship at Blend. Like, he's given me a lot of guidance. And it's just like obviously he's very excellent, but he's just a Stanford student, and having his network and his visibility just through that one person was like extremely helpful. So I can only imagine what it's like when you have 50 Stanford kids, you know, like, and they, all of their startup knowledge and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I would advise people similarly, but
it's incredible. Like, during the VC interview process, I got asked all the time, like, why is MIT like so, or seemingly from the outside, so bad for entrepreneurship compared to Harvard, compared to Stanford? And I think it's a really interesting question to think about.
Do you have any answers?
I just think, as we talked about earlier on the call, like, academia, it's valued very highly at MIT. So I think you're definitely pressured into that. Everything's very theoretical, which is good from like a critical thinking standpoint. But I think if you go to Harvard or if you go to Stanford, there's just a lot more kids who come into college and their goal is, let's start a business, or let's go into finance, or, you know, versus like, okay, let's see, you know, how much research I can do. And so I think that leads to more people, you know, starting companies out of Harvard and Stanford versus MIT.
Yeah, I guess those places are also less specialized. Like, they have more variety of disciplines. Yeah. Even like English majors who maybe have entrepreneurial interests or like business interests are going to have a totally different perspective than this specialized technical research institution.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I guess you said like you didn't know what a tech company was at all. Can you distill it for someone who doesn't know what a tech company is?
Yeah, I mean, so I think you have a few different types of tech companies. You have the big tech companies. So you have FANG or FAMGA or whatever you want to call it.
Facebook, Amazon, Google,
Microsoft. Yep. And I didn't realize this going into college, but like, these are major employers of like tons and tons of extremely smart people. And they don't just do like what you think they do, like Google, the search engine. But Google also has, you know, like tens, if not hundreds, of other extremely large products that they're working on. You know, Waymo, Google Cloud, you know, like Google Maps. There's so much stuff. So it's just like so many companies almost inside a company. I didn't understand like just how big these companies were. Yeah, like an army of people. And also just how interesting like different roles at even these big tech companies, like designer, like it's so funny. I've been talking to like all of these friends recently, and it's just like, there's a dearth of designers. I didn't even know that was a career option. Like, you can literally just learn how to create like beautiful or simple or whatever user experiences. Like, that was something that was never, I think maybe I learned what a designer was like when I worked at Blend or when I worked at Google the first time. Yeah. So it's like these career options I didn't even know about, like UX researcher, like figuring out, you know, what's the best way to put things on a page to like have somebody get through it quickly or to feel good while they, you know, navigate or whatever. I just had no idea.
And I guess you kind of mentioned the product world called to you because it was so cross-functional.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, there's just so many cool parts of each job, whether it's, you know, design or engineering or enterprise sales, if you're at an enterprise company, or marketing. Product management, I think, is the only role where you get a little like taste of everything. And you get to kind of become a, you know, jack of all trades. So master of none, but also get to have a kind of opinion about like strategy and business building, which I think I've always kind of been drawn to. And it's something that is cool. Being a VC, you get to make bets on that.
Yeah.
And I guess I think we got a little sidetracked, but yeah, so we have the FAMGAs, the big tech companies, if we're trying to explain what the tech industry is. And then we have the startups, right? FAMGA, big tech companies, also like the, you know, more like legacy tech companies that are publicly traded. And then we have startups, which are kind of, I would describe as, you know, private companies. They're not on the stock exchange, but they are, starting to get revenue, or maybe they're selling, you know, a product to a bunch of consumers, or maybe they're selling to a bunch of businesses. And these companies can be started by anybody, you know, college student, seasoned operator. And as they grow, like they require different profiles of people to make them more successful. And they also require, most of the time, like venture capital, which it was, I think I learned like what that was talking to like literally Alex, like as he was thinking about like, you know, being in YC and what should he raise and things like that. I learned what a Series A was. So it was like, just literally talking to somebody who was about to raise one. That's what I kind of started trying to learn like about the ecosystem, because I just never heard about it before.
A misconception that I had was I didn't understand from lack of experience that companies solve real problems and like provide value to people. And when you work at a few companies, you're like, okay, like this company is actually doing something for the world. I just thought like money was evil as a kid. And like, I didn't understand. Capitalism is the devil.
Yeah. I don't even know what I thought. I thought I was just so like focused on math for a long time. And then in college is when I really started to kind of figure out like, oh yeah, companies, they solve problems and you can start a company and you can join a company really early and, you know, you can have an outsized impact on, you know, a lot of different either people's or businesses, you know, lives or day to day.
Yeah. What's the most like fulfilling or like proud project you've had professionally?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I joined Scale when we were around like five people, right? And we had started as more of like a general like API for human labor, right? Like almost just like a Mechanical Turk, but make it better. And then we started like getting a lot of customer feedback that they were using us to generate ground truth labels for their machine learning models. By sending us, you know, like an image and saying, okay, we'll get your humans to box every like car in this image so that we can train our self-driving car to avoid these cars. I think we kind of just focused on that subset of things. Because we realized that, hey, this is a really big opportunity. All these self-driving car customers are going to need this. And then one of them came to us and said, okay, well, how about also all of my 3D data or the LiDAR data that our self-driving cars are collecting? Can you label this too? And then that's when I kind of had joined full time. And so then I helped, you know, build and later product manage, the 3D LiDAR annotation product. It's definitely like out of my life, the thing that I'm the most proud about, because we literally, you know, built it from nothing into a business that now most autonomous vehicle companies use as an essential part of training their ML models. So when self-driving becomes a thing, hopefully, the person who is doing self-driving or the companies that are doing self-driving will be powered by Scale. And it's like a revenue driver for Scale itself, which is, you know, Scale is continuing to grow and power, you know, the AI revolution. And I mean, I used to say that like years ago and it used to feel a little ridiculous, but like now it's like more true. And I think it will just continue to be more true. But basically, like, that sounds really glamorous, but I mean, at the time, like, it was just so hard. And I tell this to anybody starting a company, because like, I hear it all the time. Like, is it really like, is it supposed to be this hard? But like, yes. For probably like 6 months, I just didn't really sleep. I would just literally stay up and maybe I'd code during the day. And then at night, I would be a labeler. So I would label the tasks myself because we didn't have the supply density yet. Or even when we did, maybe they weren't trained properly because we didn't know how to, and we didn't have the automated infrastructure to catch bad quality. So I would just stay up late into the night. Alex would stay up. Some of the other engineers would, I mean, there was only like 10 of us at the time. So we would all be there like all night, you know, just trying to make this company work, trying to, you know, not die. And you know, so at on one hand, it was extremely hard and like emotionally very taxing. But then on the other hand, you know, now you can look back years later and say like, you know, if we hadn't done that, you know, I don't know if Scale would be the company that it is today. Like there's some chance it would have, and you know, we would have found another customer or whatever. But there's some chance that Scale wouldn't have survived. And so feeling like a part of that is just very, very, I'm very proud of it. And it's, you know, easily one of the most significant sort of events in my life.
Yeah. And if it hadn't been like that hustle, even if the company survived, it likely would not have had the same trajectory.
Yeah. And that's like a big thing. And now I'm going to maybe get on a soapbox, but just seeing all of this remote work and like, okay, well, I think everything can just move remote and that it will be just as good and it'll be equivalent. Like I can say it as a fact, there's no way I would have worked that hard if we had all been alone in our rooms apart from each other. Like that sort of energy of like being together and like, you know, being able to say, oh, like I found this idea and like then tell it to, you know, my engineering counterpart and, you know, he's coding it and I'm like doing something else. And that's just, I don't see a way to replicate that in a remote world. And so it's challenging, like as an investor, like when you're looking at companies that are, you know, remote first or a hybrid, like it's challenging, like to know, like if they have to go through that sort of same thing that Scale went through, like, you know, it'll be harder. So that's something that I'm thinking about and trying to collect data points of like, okay, like here's some examples of where maybe it's worked remote only. But we'll see.
Do you think Scale is an outlier? I mean, it's definitely an outlier in terms of its success and growth,
mm-hmm.
but was it an outlier also in terms of the work demanded by such a hard product and problem?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think Scale's moat, especially in the early days, was just the amount of operational work that we were willing to do. And it's still kind of a moat. Like, it's kind of similar. Actually, I mean, there's a lot of companies that have the same sort of almost like, I think it's called process power in the business literature. But like, you know, Amazon, all these companies that I think have similar origin stories of just like people working really, really hard and like establishing like, yeah, just really like excellent processes, but that are very human intensive at times. I don't think it's uncommon, but I mean, obviously like there are a lot of tech companies where you see less of it, but I don't know, like if you actually went inside those tech companies, would it actually, you know, you think of like Stripe or somebody like that, like that seems like a very pure tech product. I don't know. I'm sure there were some times in like Stripe's history where, you know, their core tech they had to work very hard on. Maybe it didn't have as much of a human element, but
probably different like problems, right? Like legal and regulatory versus operational human, and like trying to compete on cost, also like driving down a race to the bottom kind of dynamics with like Amazon, right? It has workers and Uber and all these companies that have marketplaces.
Yeah. So it's probably a little bit different depending on what company, but there's, I mean, I and this is, I guess, good for the podcast. Like you have to have a moat as a company. There has to be something that makes you hard to copy. Like, I mean, maybe the easiest thing is if you develop a really good brand and all the other people in your industry have bad brands. And so, okay, well you're the developer first brand, like we'll go to you. But you know, like that's not the only type of mode, and you know, it's not necessarily the one that's like the most self-sustaining, but it just kind of depends.
Are there resources or like mentors or things that have made a big impact on you as you've learned about companies and company building and this topic that sounds interesting? I know Seven Powers is a big one for those competitive moats.
Yeah, that's one of my definitely favorite books for sure. And then I mean, there's just so many resources on Twitter. Just like people that, you know, like our PMs or PM product leaders that I follow. I don't know, I can send you over kind of my list.
Following you on Twitter sounds like a good recommendation.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I you should follow these other people too, but or follow the people that I follow on Twitter and I retweet. So if you follow me, it's an index of these people. Yeah. And then, I mean, there's just so many good books. There's a lot of, there's a lot of groups that I'd say like being a part of, like has been really beneficial. Like, there's an early version, but basically On Deck, I think is great in terms of like exploring new industries before you get in them. It's kind of like a YC, but you don't really have to have a company, or maybe you just want to explore a new industry versus like starting a new company. And then just like a lot of support groups, just online. Let's see what other resources.
That's good. That's good.
Okay.
I just learned our friend Drew Bent went through On Deck in December.
Oh, nice.
He highly recommends it. He loves it.
Yeah, I did the Angels program, so that was cool.
You did? Oh my God, everyone's doing On Deck.
Yeah, they are. And then I did, there was someone who joined On Deck, like, or her company basically got acquired by On Deck, but she did like a PM fellowship. So I did an early version of On Deck, I would say, with product management. Yeah.
I see. Very cool. So you're a double On Decker. When you were in the startup tough days, is there a memory of a particular thing that got you through some of those? Because I think, I mean, maybe some people aren't wired as you are for hard problems and just already being excited about company building and trying to see it through and having this future vision of yourself. But what in that moment got you through?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really about the kind of friendship and camaraderie of the early team. Like, I think Alex, in particular, but also a lot of the early team at Scale, just had this like sort of attitude of like, you know, we're in this together. Like, we were, you know, a lot of us knew each other before, and so it was just kind of about like that sort of, we're a team, we're gonna do this. And I mean, I think like, yeah, at an early stage startup, if you don't absolutely love like everybody that you're working with, I mean, I would not have wanted to like, yeah, do all of that with people that I didn't really respect and really think were awesome. So it's definitely just about like working with people that you really, really like, and you really can learn a lot of things from.
Okay, well, we're running up on time. This is amazing. I have so many more questions, but just one quick. What's the craziest thing you've eaten?
Interesting. Let me see. I ate worms when I was a baby, when I was unattended, like on a fishing trip. My dad always tells the story. I like literally just started eating the worms. let's see, but in recent memory, a 1,000-year-old egg, I don't know, fermented or whatever. I thought it was pretty good.
And what is a recent social media or like internet rabbit hole that you've been through?
Ooh, I mean, just conspiracies about coronavirus. And like also just figuring out like, you know, do we think the vaccine will work against the other strains? And will this just be something we have to live with forever? Yeah, that's a lot of the rabbit holes I've been down.